and welcome to episode 18 of Investigating the Post Office Scandal. My name is Rebecca Thompson and I wrote the first investigation into the Post Office Scandal for Computer Weekly in 2009.
And my name is Nick Wallace and I am the author of the book, The Great Post Office Scandal. This is our second podcast covering evidence from the last 7 days. In our first, episode 17, The Oppenheim Project, we heard from Keith Todd and Tony Oppenheim, two former top dogs at Fujitsu. Episode 18, which is this one, will focus on what happened on Thursday the 27th and Friday the 28th of October, where we heard from a grand total of 3 witnesses. But a quick explainer before we go any further. I don't know how useful this was last time. I've tried to make it even simpler this time, Rebecca. Because we're dealing with the ancient history of Horizon, it's worth explaining that before the post office's faulty Horizon IT system, which was used to prosecute postmasters for financial crimes they hadn't committed, became Horizon, it was known as Pathway, or the Pathway Project. And ICL was the arm of Fujitsu responsible for the design, build, rollout and maintenance of the Pathway Horizon project before that company was rebranded as Fujitsu UK. Is that a better explanation than last time, Rebecca?
I think it's as clear as it can get, because I'm basic, I tend to use the three interchangeably, ICL, Pathway and Fujitsu. And obviously that's not always correct, but it broadly...
Yes, exactly. ICL, Pathway, Fujitsu are one lot, the post office is another lot, and Horizon, or the Pathway Project, is the actual system itself. Yeah. So you listened in on Thursday, the 27th. Who did we hear from and what did they say?
We heard first from Terry Austin, who is a former systems program director at ICL. And we kicked off with the strongly worded 1998 audit report about how badly built the Horizon EPOS system software was.
We ought to just explain what EPOS means as well, oughtn't we? EPOS is the electronic point of sale section of the Horizon software. So basically the electronic till bit at the front end of the system, which the postmasters had to use.
Yeah, basically the till. Yeah. That's what I've always understood it to be.
Yeah.
This report, in my humble opinion, produced one of the best quotes of the inquiry so far. So one of its conclusions was, whoever wrote this code clearly has no understanding of elementary mathematics or the most basic rules of programming, which is pretty damning.
Well, it's just extraordinary. If that's where they are in the middle of 98 about this billion-pound PFI project that they themselves had created, I mean, where do you go from there?
It wasn't a great place to be. And if you did want to read a bit more about this particular part of the evidence, Carl Flinders has again picked up on it.
Oh, yes, he has. Yes, Carl Flinders at Computer Weekly has written a brilliant article on this. So go Google that or just listen on.
So Austin pretty much blamed this terrible quality of Horizon software on a few unnamed members of staff who were apparently removed from the team. And overall, his evidence was focused on why there were so many errors, why it was so hard for ICL's technical teams to get rid of those errors and figure out exactly what they were, and whether they made the right decisions when trying to do so.
Yeah, there was a significant amount of questioning on the recommendation from the audit that large chunks of the code simply didn't work properly and would need to be rewritten. Austin said that he took soundings from his technical lead, among others, on this issue, and they, as a group, decided that they wouldn't rewrite the Horizon software code. Now, if you've read my book, you'll know that one anonymous programmer I've been in contact with was absolutely adamant that the Horizon code had to be rewritten, so he was siding with the auditors. And he said this in the strongest possible terms to anyone who would listen, including, I think, Terry Austin. But Austin ultimately chose to ignore those people because he said he and his team weren't sure whether or not this was the best solution. This is one of the exchanges between Terry Austin and Jason Blake, who is one of the barristers working for the inquiry.
This was a massive issue for me, and I discussed it with all my technical team in depth. Rewriting a product is not necessarily a solution in itself, because you can reintroduce problems or you can have people who don't understand the requirement as well, and you can actually end up with a product that's even maybe a little better but not necessarily any better. My preferred solution at the time, having spoken to all the people, is that the decay was in certain parts of the product and we should focus our efforts and see if we can stabilize those parts that were causing the majority of the pinnacle. And in fact, this was a view strongly felt by Steve Warrick, who I had a lot of respect for.
And we'll come to see how your view was that you weren't in favour of a rewrite.
Well, not initially. It was still an option on the table. I hadn't dismissed it. I just felt that it wasn't necessarily. We should explore other avenues first before taking that pretty drastic course of action.
But it was a recommendation from ICL Pathways auditor Jan Holmes.
It was a recommendation.
Yes.
So that was Terry Austin being questioned by Jason Blake. Austin's evidence also covered a theme that is starting to feel fairly familiar already, dodgy communication and information sharing between Post Office and ICL. So you can see the inquiry legal team attempting to understand the extent and quality of this communication and data sharing between the two parties as part of that crucial question of who knew what when they knew it. And it's becoming clear how difficult that might be to answer, not least because communications sounded fairly poor. So Austin described, for example, very little technical program contact with the Post Office, and the relationship could at times be prickly.
Yes, it's worth remembering that Pathway Horizon was a PFI project, not a standard client-supplier contract. And Fujitsu clearly thought that the Post Office were meddling and moving the goalposts. There's a lot of mission creep described in some of the early exchanges around this whole project. But Terry Austin was straight up accused of being obstructive to the Post Office's technical teams on the PDA, which was the Joint Program Delivery Authority. And interestingly, he didn't deny it. Have a listen.
It's been alleged that you obstructed the PDA in getting hold of certain information. It's been said that you had said that the contract prevented you from providing them with certain information.
Well, that was the PFI. I mean, I was, if you like, not instructed, but certainly advised by my peers and by my managers and seniors that a PFA contract meant that we were to be left to develop the system. That was our risk, our responsibility. And whether we were successful or not would be proved by acceptance.
Do you think it would have helped to have shared more information with the Post Office?
That was not in the nature of the contract, with respect. When you're carrying the risk, then the customer's taking a view that they wish to transfer the risk to a supplier, and that supplier then defines the system in the way they want to define it. And therefore, it's not a waterfall approach. It's not a standard contract. You needed a fully functional requirement in order to do that.
It may not have been part of the contract, but knowing now what we know, presumably more information sharing at an earlier stage would have been beneficial, wouldn't it?
Whether I believed it or not, it's not the nature of the contract. And I did have to adhere to my peers in that line. It was not something that I could choose to do.
Terry Austin, so how about our afternoon's witnesses?
Yes, so after lunch on Thursday the 27th, we met John Bennett, who is a former managing director at ICL Pathway. And there were a couple of interesting points from him. So firstly, we heard about a breach of contract letter from the Post Office to ICL in the late 90s, and ICL's strongly worded response, so all part of that prickly relationship. And one interesting part of this is when ICL started installing Horizon, it discovered that lots of Post Office branches just weren't fit for purpose. So they didn't have enough of a power supply or even enough desk space for the computer terminals. They just weren't set up to have this sort of tech in them. And the Post Office hadn't done any work on its side to figure that out. So ICL had to visit every single branch and do the work to enable each one to connect to the network. And overall, Bennett seemed to want to draw attention to the Post Office's role in creating a system that didn't work. So we heard about low quality of data from their side. We heard about the poor training for postmasters again. And he even suggested that branches had always found it hard to balance their accounts every week, even before Horizon, when the manual paper-based system was used.
You also suggest, don't you, though, that the skill knowledge of the sub-postmasters was an issue rather than the structural issue, there being a structural issue with the pathway system?
Well, I'm not trying to dodge the issue that we had problems ourselves. We had a lot of problems, and you've referred to those earlier. But another end of the EPOS service is, of course, what happens in the post offices themselves. And that, I think, takes you into a broader issue, which is to do with the adequacy of the training. for the staff who had to use the system. We were contracted to provide substantial training to staff, both the managers and indeed the other staff operating the system. But this was, has often been referred to, a major management of change program. And whether it was sufficient to rely just on technical training on how to use a system to really cope with the issues of helping 30,000 people with variety of skills, fears and motivation to use the system well is a big challenge. And I think my understanding, my knowledge of the EPOS system end to end is that part of it were well used and people liked, which was the daily transactions, the ability to construct, to register a transaction during the day when dealing with people across the counter, in other words, the interaction across the screen. I think that system, from my recollection, was generally well used and well liked. The real weaknesses, which is what you pointed to, were really to do with the end of week accounting process, which proved to be, for many people, very difficult. It was perhaps my understanding, and I admit I might have this wrong, that the question of balancing had been a big issue well before Pathway introduced EPOS. In other words, the paper-based system, which predated the Pathway or the POCL system, was never an easy system to use at that time and required a... I might have this wrong, I'm perhaps talking outside my knowledge, but I think balancing at the end of the week had never been an easy thing to do.
John Bennett there. Now, Bennett gave some evidence which also seemed to contradict that which we heard from Tony Oppenheim the previous day.
Yes, so relating to the possibility of ICL staff being able to access Postmasters transaction data or access the Horizon system. So this has been one of the most significant long-running issues with this story. Because, Nick, you'll make sure I'm saying it correctly, but because the post office was claiming that they couldn't access that data.
Yes, right up until 2019, essentially.
So on Wednesday 26th, Oppenheim essentially said that remote access by ICL was necessary, possible, and actually quite normal for a large IT system, with the data available for free to the post office whenever they requested it, the audit data. But then on the next day, so Thursday 27th, his former boss said this.
I didn't hear the evidence from Mr. Oppenheim, but I have seen in one of the reports the suggestion that ICL staff or ICL Pathways staff would somehow have access to transaction data. I found that an amazing allegation or suggestion. And in my view, that was never contemplated or happened, was never suggested it should happen. And I really don't know why and where anyone should think that could have taken place.
So that was John Bennett. And at the end of his evidence, the inquiry chair, Sir Wyn Williams, flagged that inconsistency and said that the team will need to clarify this by sending Oppenheim's transcript to Bennett to see if he agrees with it. So we'll see what comes from that.
And so we went on to Friday, which was given over entirely to one man, David Miller, the former Horizon Programme Director at the Post Office.
Nick, you've given this quite a close watch, so what did you make of his evidence?
Well, Miller was a post office lifer with no technical experience, or certainly not any sort of hands-on IT programming experience. And he was appointed to the job of Horizon Programme Director by his bosses at the post office without even an interview. He was just told he was doing it. Miller reported to Stuart Sweetman at the time, who was the post office managing director, and the inquiry is going to hear from him actually this week. The most significant element of Miller's evidence, in my view, was that he told the post office board in 1999 that Horizon and the Horizon software was robust. But before we get to that, I just want to mention a minute from a National Federation of Sub-Postmasters Executive Council meeting in June 1999, so just before Miller telling the Post Office Board that Horizon was robust. And this was also just a few months before Horizon was greenlit for national rollout. So there were around 300 guinea pig branches who were dealing with a live trial of the Horizon system. And this was a message that was expressed directly to Mr. Miller. So I'm quoting here from a minute. There was a general discussion on the severe difficulties being experienced by sub-postmasters who were already running the automated system. Seven sheets of comments from the northeast of England had been passed to Mr. Dave Miller. The difficulties and trauma being experienced by some sub-postmasters were giving rise to concerns for their health and emotional well-being. It was felt by some that a tragedy was not far away if something was not altered soon. The software was considered to be poor quality and not intended to run such a huge network. So that was put, that quote was directly put to David Miller on Friday, and this was his response.
That meeting was a very lively meeting. It was held at Newcastle Rugby Club. There was a recital of concerns and problems, quite genuinely, from the sub-postmasters. And towards the end of the meeting, I actually said, if any sub-postmaster here does not want this in their offices, if they can't cope with it or whatever, please say so, and it will be removed in the next fortnight. There was one person in the room, one sub-postmaster, who said they wanted the equipment removed.
But a reference here to concerns about their health and emotional well-being at this stage in the summer of 1999. Presumably it wasn't an all or nothing. They could have had an improved version, couldn't they?
Well, I mean, there was a huge amount of work going on the products to try and get them into shape. So I think that was a given. What I was trying to find out, given the words you've quoted to me here, is whether it was as extreme as it may appear here. And I'm only saying that when given the opportunity not to have the equipment in the office, only one sub-postmaster took up that option.
So it was the sub-postmaster's fault for not rejecting the system.
Exactly. No, I think, moot point. I think Mr. Miller was trying to say that Horizon can't have been that bad, or they all would have put their hands up. The problem was, Horizon was that bad. And throughout the morning, Mr. Miller was taken through the many, many, many problems that Horizon was suffering during his tenure. And he was shown minutes of this Post Office Board meeting that he attended in July 1999. And this was a crunch meeting, as the Post Office Board had to choose whether or not to accept the Horizon system by the 31st of July, that month. So it had something like 15 days to get this right. And that was a deadline that was being set by Fujitsu's board, because if the Post Office didn't accept Horizon as a system, there were going to be severe doubts about Fujitsu UK's financial viability, because they just sunk so many millions of pounds into this project. Now, according to the minutes of the meeting, this is the Post Office Board meeting in July 1999, he told board members that Horizon was, and I quote, robust and fit for service. Again, questioned by Julian Blake, it led to the following exchange at the inquiry on Friday.
Looking at point six, excluding the concerns over training, David Miller considered the system robust and fit for service. Seven, a number of sub-postmasters were experiencing difficulties operating the system, and in particular with balancing. Now, robust and fit for service, that all sounds quite different to all those documents that we've been looking at this morning. Would you agree with that?
Yes, and I've read this document and I agree with you.
And this is only a month after the NFSP meeting.
Yeah.
Where concern was being raised about the trauma and health and well-being of sub-postmasters. What's your view on this now, then?
If I went in there and said David Miller considered the system robust and fit for service, that wasn't correct.
Do you remember did the board question you on that at all?
I'm sorry, and this genuine, I have no recollection of this.
If you made that statement, do you regret it now?
If I made that statement, I do regret it.
Why do you think Mr. Miller regrets that statement, Rebecca?
Because it wasn't true.
It wasn't true, Rebecca. And we spent the rest of the day seeing just how untrue it was. At one point, Miller was asked why, when he knew just how bad Horizon was several weeks after he went to the board and told them it was robust, he didn't go back and tell them that he'd got it wrong. And this is where he threw his boss, Stuart Sweetman, under the bus, saying it was Sweetman's job to go to the board because he was on it and he was the project sponsor and he was just as aware as Dave Miller was as to the problems with Horizon.
So all in all, it was another big week of evidence. Coming up over the next few days, you've already mentioned we'll hear from Mr. Sweetman. Who else is coming up?
We've got Mike Coombs, former Horizon Programme Director at ICL Pathway, Jeremy Folkes, former Infrastructure Assurance Team Leader on the Horizon Programme working for the Post Office, and I think he'll have something to say about Fujitsu's alleged obstructiveness over this PFI deal. Andrew Simpkins, former Programme Management Team at Post Office, and then former Company Secretary to the Post Office, someone called Jonathan Evans. Can I just plug something before the end of the podcast?
Yes, if you must.
Yes, thank you. Next week, on Thursday the 10th of November, I am doing a talk at the Kenton Theatre in Henley-on-Thames with former sub-postmaster Pam Stubbs. We're doing it to a paying audience, but we haven't sold a vast amount of tickets. I'm not going to cancel it, as we aren't far away from breaking even, but it would be nice to break even if we can. So if you want to come to the Kenton Theatre in Henley-on-Thames on Thursday the 10th, on the evening of Thursday the 10th of November, please Google that and buy a ticket as soon as you can. In fact, I will put a link to the box office directly in this podcast blurb so you can click on it. Oh, and do please bring as many of your friends as possible. Henley-on-Thames is lovely, and so, I'm told, is the Kenton Theatre.
Wonderful. We will be back with another podcast at the weekend.
Yes, thank you so much for listening to Investigating the Post Office Scandal. Don't forget to like and subscribe and follow so you get each new episode as soon as it drops.
Investigating the Post Office Scandal is produced and presented by Rebecca Thompson and Nick Wallace with sage advice and support from Whistledown Productions.
We will be back next week.
See you soon. Bye.